Now, roughly 1.1 million Americans lost health insurance coverage between 2017 and 2018. That's according to a recent survey conducted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The survey found this is the second year in a row where the country has seen a sizable increase in the number of uninsured citizens. While there are a number of factors at play, one big potential influence is the repeal of the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate by congressional Republicans in 2017. That rule required all Americans to purchase insurance or have coverage or face a tax penalty. Our next guest is here to talk about the latest CDC findings, what's changed with the Affordable Care Act over the last couple of years, and talk about how healthcare might play a central role for presidential candidates as we head into the 2020 election. Phil Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's co-author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be back.
Well, Phil, we have these numbers from the CDC showing another year of now declines in the number of covered Americans, where that number had been going up over the years. What do you make of this latest CDC survey?
Well, I think the, you know, looking at the trend from 2017 to 2018, there wasn't a statistically significant drop in the number of people who were insured. However, if you look over the sort of period from 2015 to 2018, it's a sizable number of people who have lost coverage. And when you sort of drill into the data, you realize that it's sort of not everybody is experiencing that loss in the same way. That I think a lot of what explains this loss are, so the ACA contemplated expanding health insurance coverage in a couple different ways. The first way was that people who were making up to 138% of the federal poverty level would get coverage through Medicaid. And then people who are sort of between 138% and about 400% of the federal poverty level would purchase coverage on these new private health insurance exchanges. And they're, you know, importantly, the subsidies for purchasing those that coverage on those exchanges is sort of adjusted to your income. So people who are making sort of over 400% FPL don't qualify for subsidies, and it's sort of tapered up. You get more if you make less money. And what that means is that, especially for people who don't receive a substantial amount of subsidy to purchase private insurance, they're going to be really sensitive to changes in the marketplace, right? As premiums go up, or as the number of plans in their area becomes less competitive and people aren't sort of competing on price, they are going to have less of an incentive to purchase coverage. So when you look at people who are making sort of above $12,000 a year for an individual that's around 200% of the FPL, there was a statistically significant increase between 2015 and 2018 in the percentage who were uninsured. So it went up from 7.6 to 8.3%. And that's pretty telling. And I think there are a couple different things that sort of may have contributed to that. I mean, I think the first big thing is that in 2017, the individual mandate was repealed by Republicans in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And in a sense, that took away the sort of legal requirement that people buy coverage. So even if it's expensive, you know, there's this sort of legal requirement that you had to purchase it. And with that gone, there's not a lot of incentive to purchase that coverage, especially when premiums go up. And I think the other thing is that the sort of politics of the ACA has really created a level of uncertainty, which makes it undesirable for insurers to get involved in the marketplace. And I think that that the sort of politics of the ACA has also made it difficult to respond to problems as they come up. And so there's not been a lot of maintenance, in a sense, of the law.
Right. There's been talk that, okay, yes, there have been problems with the Affordable Care Act. They are fixable problems in Congress. But the debate in Congress has been, do we get rid of the Affordable Care Act, repeal it completely and replace it, or do we move to some kind of Medicare for all? There hasn't been a lot of appetite, it seems like, for the tweaks that you were just mentioning, Phil.
Well, right, and I think this week you're going to see Democrats vote on a sort of package of fixes that I think, you know, health policy folks have talked about, experts have talked about for a long time, like, you know, providing more money for states to set up their own insurance marketplaces. Like, one finding that comes out of the CDC statistics is that when states set up their own insurance marketplace, people in those states are much more likely to purchase insurance coverage on it. And that happens for a variety of reasons. States that set up their own insurance marketplaces, you know, are negotiating directly with insurers. They have better advertising campaigns. And so you see a huge differential there. And so that's sort of one thing the Democrats are pushing now. Trying to restore funding for sort of enrollment outreach and increase reinsurance payments that sort of stabilize some of these vulnerable rural, especially marketplaces. You know, the problem, though, is I think this is actually something that, at least among Democrats, including Democrats that support Medicare for All or sort of moving to a different kind of insurance system, you know, they still support sort of making tweaks, making fixes to the ACA. But this bill, when it passes the House, as I'm sure it will, is going to be dead on arrival in the Senate. It's not going to be taken up by Mitch McConnell. And that just is that's emblematic of the broader political pattern here, which is that what actually would have to be done to sort of fix this law or at least make it work better on its own terms has just never really been in the window of political possibility.
Talking to Phil Rocco from Marquette University's Department of Political Science, co-author of the book Obamacare Wars, looking at a CDC study, a survey showing over the last few years increasing numbers of Americans without insurance, reversing a trend that had been going on for some years before that. Phil, we heard from some people on Facebook about this. Parker writes, he didn't lose his health insurance, but he pays about 20% of his $40,000 salary to cover his family. That's not sustainable, Parker says. And Brandy says it's not enough to have insurance anymore with all the costs from premiums, deductibles, and so on. You can be fully insured and still end up in the poorhouse. So even if people are covered, they may not be covered that well, or they may be paying a lot to do it, Phil.
Yeah, that's right. I think both of those comments really reflect the, you know, experience of health insurance for a lot of people, right? People don't live in a statistical table that shows lower levels of insurance or higher levels of insurance. People live and experience insurance primarily through, you know, what they're paying in copays, what they're paying when they go to the pharmacist counter, what their annual deductible is. And, you know, one pattern that we've seen, you know, if you think about what the ACA was really focused on, it's really focused on shoring up those populations of people who were not receiving insurance through their employer, say. But what we've seen among people who have employer-sponsored insurance is that every year, incrementally, there is more cost shifting from employers to employees. The number of people enrolled in high deductible health plans where they're really experiencing those high costs has sort of gradually ramped over the years. And, you know, there's a sort of theoretical political limit to how much, you know, employers can shift those costs onto employees without some kind of sort of reaction to the absence of affordability there.
Is that cost shifting from employers to employees something that was driven in some part by the Affordable Care Act, or is this just following a trend we've seen for years, maybe decades?
Yeah, I mean, this is arguably the trend that led to the passage of the Affordable Care Act in the first place, right? One of the things that you see if you go back sort of in the timeline is that the sort of the way that the health insurance regime in the United States was sort of set up, it was this expectation that because employers, large employers, got subsidies from the federal government to make it easier to offer insurance coverage to their employees, that would be sort of how we most people got insurance. But over time, you had a few major changes, right? Number one, the cost of healthcare, you know, you saw huge increases in medical inflation. Second, the kinds of jobs that people had sort of shifted from jobs where people had collective bargaining rights through their union to jobs that were there were sort of less negotiating power for workers. And then, you know, the third major trend is that in the late 1970s, you started to see the greater segmentation of risk pools. So you would have insurers sort of creating, or employers creating their own self-insured plans, and then these sort of broader risk pools became more expensive. And this, you know, led to a spiral where other employers would dump their insurance coverage as well. And so that rising cost of healthcare and the increasing, you know, unwillingness of employers to foot the bill, and the lack of workers to sort of bargain, inability of workers to bargain for that, I think is the thing that really was what people cited when they were justifying why the ACA needed to be passed in the first place. But the ACA didn't really reverse any of those underlying dynamics, political dynamics or market dynamics that cause healthcare to be so expensive for employers to take on.
Phil Rocco is with us to talk about healthcare coverage and the politics thereof. A recent report from the CDC found roughly 1.1 million Americans lost health insurance coverage in 2018, a couple of years of decline now after some years of growth in coverage. Phil's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and co-author of the book Obamacare Wars: Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the long-running, ongoing political fight over health insurance, health care, and the Affordable Care Act? What would you change? What do you want your elected officials to do when it comes to health care coverage? And what do you want to hear from candidates for Congress and the White House in 2020 when it comes to health care issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our conversation about the latest CDC report that found that 1.1 million fewer Americans had health insurance coverage in 2018, and how the fight over health care is impacting people and politics. Phil Rocco is with us, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on this latest news from the CDC? What do you want to see from political candidates when it comes to healthcare coverage? What's your experience? Are you uncovered now where you were covered a couple of years ago? Are you covered paying a lot? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi, thank you. I've been a sole proprietor of business for over 35 years. I've been paying my own health insurance during that time. And the ACA is the only thing that has given me affordable health care and the opportunity to live not in fear of developing a pre-existing condition. And that is a tremendous amount of stress. What I want to hear from candidates, particularly Republicans, is if they don't want the ACA, then what's their backup plan? They don't seem to have a backup plan for any of these things, and they've had well over a decade to think about it. I think the same thing goes for foreign policy, for economics, and certainly for climate change.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Phil, Tom, gives us a lot to work with there. First, as a business owner himself, he says the Affordable Care Act is the only way he can access coverage. Is that, you think, a common story?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, the ACA was a policy about, you know, looking at populations of people, including, I think, you know, increasing number of people who are sort of running their own business, aren't sort of, you know, being employed by what we think of in the sort of mid-20th century large employer model. People who are doing sort of more entrepreneurial activity and saying, you know, these folks have sort of historically lacked access to coverage. I think that that sort of small business population was a huge, huge piece of it. I think that, you know, that is a pretty broad story, you know, about the population of people whom the ACA was intended to benefit.
Tom, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Phil, Tom took us into the politics of this, too. He says he didn't see a legitimate backup plan for Republicans if they did manage to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. He wasn't clear on what they were replacing it with. Do we have a sense of what Republicans would replace it with?
You know, I think that's one of the sort of trickiest areas for Republicans, which was, you know, what was their distinctive, you know, alternative to the ACA, you know, going to be? And I think what it ended up being was, looking at the sort of details of the law, was a law that was just simply less generous, provided health care to fewer people, fewer subsidies, fewer people on Medicaid, and the like. And so it wasn't as if the Republican alternatives actually solved a lot of the problems that Republicans claimed they wanted to solve, or the frustrations that people had with the ACA. In fact, when you look at what the laws, the proposed laws would have done, you know, the actual content of what they were would have caused more people to lose insurance coverage. And if you look at what the Trump administration has sort of mainly been doing, at least on the private coverage side, is they've sort of used their ability to shape regulations to allow for the sale of policies like short-term, limited-duration health insurance plans that the ACA, you know, intended it to tamp down on, which are plans that actually provide much less in terms of the benefits that people might expect. And so, you know, in a sense, the content of what the Trump administration has done is sort of repackage elements of the insurance marketplace that existed prior to the ACA, where more or less skimpier plans were being offered. They might sort of look cheaper on paper, but in terms of what you're actually paying out of pocket for your coverage, it was a lot higher. And if I could identify any alternative, it's something that looks sort of more like that, but certainly not an alternative that really responds to some of the problems that people cite when they say that they don't like their health care on the ACA, like high deductibles, something like that.
Talking to Phil Rocco from Marquette University about the Affordable Care Act and the politics of health care. Back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hello. Yes. So it seems that our House of Representatives and our senators, having served 5 years, will get free health care for life. Now, we've also spent 18 years and roughly $13 trillion bombing unarmed women and children in the Middle East. And I think that's ridiculous that all that money could have been spent on incredible health care for every citizen and free education for every citizen in the United States. But instead, we've done an appalling job of tearing apart the Middle East and not spending a dime on the American public.
Mike, thanks for the call. So, Mike, Phil's saying if our priorities are on health care, we could afford much better.
Yeah, and I think that the in one concrete sense, healthcare has remained, you know, at the top of public concerns. When you ask people what they view as sort of one of the most important issues that is driving them to the polls, one of the things that they care about the most when they're making decisions about candidates, I mean, healthcare has remained this, top-level concern for voters. And I think one important reason that is, right, despite the fact that the ACA passed, is that when people think about how much they are spending on healthcare, and you know, even thinking about what they receive in exchange, how well they feel that they're doing, they don't feel especially, you know, like they are spending the right amount. They're spending too much for healthcare and not necessarily getting the quality of care that they demand. And so, you know, I think this is one of these issues where there is a lot of pent-up political demand that I think both at the federal and, frankly, at the state level in many states, there's just not been an especially large amount of responsiveness to.
And Phil, we just don't have too much time left, but we're seeing the idea of Medicare for All as a slogan, at least among Democratic candidates. In a minute or so, can you give us a nutshell of what practically they're talking about?
So, the major sort of Medicare for All plans, are focused on reducing the cost of care by making the federal government the single payer for care, meaning that it would be taking care of a lot of the administrative responsibilities, eliminating a lot of the duplication of labor that is involved in negotiating contracts with private insurers. And, you know, this sort of idea is sort of rather than sort of patching up the holes, people who didn't necessarily have access to insurance coverage like the ACA did, the approach of single-payer Medicare for All is to actually reconfigure the healthcare system so that a lot of the dynamics that drives people to demand more from government in terms of healthcare policy, or that leads people to be unsatisfied with how expensive their care is. I mean, it's really intended to sort of reverse those longer-term dynamics that have made healthcare so unaffordable.
Phil, we'll talk to you again, and we'll have some more time to expand on that. Thanks for giving us the quick and dirty
Thanks
version
very much.
There. Thanks for
All right,
joining us
care.
Today. I appreciate it. That's Phil Rocco, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. He's co-author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. He joined us today to talk about a new CDC survey report. It finds that 1.1 million people more were without health insurance coverage in 2018 than the previous year. That was continuing a downward trend, reversing an upward trend over the years before that. And we looked at the role healthcare and healthcare policies could play in the 2020 elections for Congress and the White House.